you know, success is not a destination. It's really a journey, I think. You know, how can you live a successful life? It's not just, hey, I'm a success or a failure. It's how can I live successfully right. and manage my time and my life in a positive way. And so I've tried to do that every day. And I guess that's the way I look at it.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know. Share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further. Welcome back to Weiss Advice. I am your host, Yona Weiss, and I am joined today by John Pugh of Pugh Management, who's hailing from Boston, Massachusetts. What's going on today, John?
Hey, Yona. Great to be here. Happy to be taking part in this conversation. Great to be here with your listeners.
Yeah, well, the pleasure is mine. I'm glad we finally got the chance to speak. And this is, you know, some topics that I think a lot of our listeners will really get a lot out of. Now, I say Boston with that you know, thick accent. I actually was born in Boston. So I lived there until I was 9 years old. And my father should be well. He said he realized he needed to get us out of Boston as soon as, you know, my older brother like came home and was like, I want to watch Star Wars. Okay. We want to go to the movie and see Star Wars. So he said we needed to move. So we moved to California, but that was just a joke. Anyways, John, you know, give us a little background. I mean, you are the founder of Pugh Management, which is a strategic partner to family offices in real estate development and projects. Give me a little background how that started. I mean, when, you know, you have a background in architecture, I believe. I saw you went to MIT where you got a postgraduate degree in architecture. What did this, real estate development, where did that start off for you?
Well, it's a good question. You know, I always really had an interest in design and buildings and loved real estate and the built environment. And had worked on Wall Street for about 5 years and was trying to kind of figure out what would be the right kind of next step for me. And my father, who's an engineer who designed ships for the Navy, he's had a career that he really loved and enjoyed and is passionate about. And I realized that, you know, I was actually really passionate about real estate and loved design and construction as that piece as well. And had this business background. And so went back, did an architectural degree, and, you know, really kind of got into the design field and learned a lot about that. I'm a registered architect, as you mentioned, but recognized pretty quickly that I belonged in the real estate field, real estate development in particular, and made a transition. So I ended up working with a group by the name of Samuels and Associates, which is a fairly large development firm here in Boston, on some projects in the Fenway, large mixed-use projects, Landmark Center redevelopment, which was more than 1 million square foot, you know, everything from office and retail to multifamily. And that was really my first foray and experience in that type of complex development environment.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Loved every second of it. Had a great team, great group of people. And, you know, it was just a great way for me to transition into the field. So it's been an interesting experience. You know, after I finished that, working with Samuels, transitioned to more of an entrepreneurial space and began partnering with family offices. You know, it's funny. It's the kind of thing that is funny in life. Sometimes you just kind of end up where you belong. And right. I'm part of this nonprofit board, which is called the Congress for New Urbanism, the New England branch. And their focus is really on creating sustainable, walkable downtowns and places, really place creation, as opposed to just, you know, throwing up something to make some money. And that really kind of, you know, resonated with me, and I've actually connected with, you know, with a couple of family offices through some of the work that we've done there, which has been great. And that's really what got me started. I ended up connecting with two groups that had an interest in investing in real estate, and really just, you know, connected with them, and we started talking about different projects, and here we are today. So
yeah, that's amazing. I think, you know, it's a good point. We've brought this up before, but when you're networking and you want to, I think, volunteer, you know, for something that you're passionate about, something that actually speaks to you. Not only, obviously, is there that fulfillment of giving back to the community, but it's a great way to network with others who are, you know, have similar values. And like you said, you met some family offices through that, which now has kind of springboarded, you know, your current entrepreneurial career.
Yeah, I agree. I can't say enough about, you know, doing something that you're passionate about. And, you know, it's real estate. You obviously, there's a lot of money involved in real estate, and it can be, you know, a motivation for some people. But I think in the end, people are more motivated by creating value for others. And, mm-hmm. and how do you create value for others? And in my mind, it's always been something that I've had an interest in. And it, so much of it really is, what do you care about? What do you love doing? And if you can find something that you really care about and can be passionate about and excited about every day, then, you know, you're going to create the most value for others, which I think is why we're all here. Right.
Sure. So I want to ask you, you obviously you're doing syndications, right? You're doing development, real estate developments. And we've talked to a bunch of syndicators here on this podcast, but I want to kind of pick your brain on why, or how rather, the family office connection has really been more valuable to you than, you know, let's say other private equity and other types of firms like that.
Yeah, I guess I'd say that they it really just was the approach that was first presented to me because of my relationship with family office. I wouldn't call it better or worse. I think it's probably better for ground up construction deals if you're looking, because you have to have a very large amount of capital to be able to pull that off. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the syndicators are doing more existing stabilized assets that they're purchasing, maybe doing some type of value add strategy on. And so that is a very effective, you know, syndicating direct to kind of investors, high net worth investors, very effective in that manner. And we do that as well. But when we, you know, when we first got started, it was, hey, we've got a $25 million deal and we've got a, you know, $17 million in construction. We need to figure out how we can, you know, how are you going to guarantee a loan for, you know, $17+ million? And that was a big factor. So, so that's a big piece, but you know, I think everyone's got a different way of doing business. And I think, you know, it's something, like I said, that we absolutely are looking to do as well in future deals.
Absolutely. So let's talk about that a second, future deals. I mean, we're in 2021, right?
Yep.
Things have changed a little bit. But for the most part, I think everyone has a positive outlook on the markets that are growing markets. I believe you're focused, you know, in the Southeast a lot and some of the growing markets there. What are you working on now? I mean, I know multifamily, industrial. I mean, tell me a little bit about what, you know, what you're working on and why those particular classes in this market.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a presence in Boston. Like you said, we're here in Boston. We're actively working on a couple of projects in Boston. One of them is a distribution center in the Malden Melrose area, which is just outside of Boston downtown. We're working on an initiative in Tampa, which was a value add investment opportunity for our investors. So we're looking at purchasing you know, Class B product in the Tampa area and performing some value add upgrades, some efficiencies, improving management, et cetera, mm-hmm. and kind of managing those for cash flow. So that's something that we're launching right now. And we're working on that today. Also looking at some deals in Charlotte, North Carolina. We have two industrial deals and a multifamily deal there that we're looking at that are all of which are ground up. We got a couple different initiatives. I have some great partners that I work with here in Boston, AJ Bowman and Bonnie Burgett out of Austin, Texas. And then we have a group down in Tampa as well, and some people in North Carolina. So it's really a team effort, as you know, and it's been great. But I really think, you know, in the end, we're going to have some real opportunities, you know, so many assets, like you said, you know, because of the distress situation that took place in 2020, I think, you know, it's really just accelerated a lot of the trends that we were already seeing with e-commerce, and also with the move towards both multifamily and single family for rent. Mm-hmm. So we're, you know, really kind of have our eyes open for some of those opportunities. But I can't say enough about, you know, another topic that I'm really passionate about is redeveloping commercial assets that are, you know, underutilized. There's because of COVID, right. You know, there's been a lot of bankruptcies in movie theaters, shopping centers, shopping malls, you know, the cash flow there is really kind of tapered off, and there's been a lot of challenging situations. I think, you know, property owners in some of those situations are best served to think about redevelopment and into another type of asset. So that's something that we specialize in, given our background. So we spend time with property owners, partner with property owners to help them kind of walk through that. So we'll look at a portfolio and say, okay, you own, you know, 10 movie theaters or 10 shopping centers around this particular geographic area, and help them kind of sort through which ones may make sense to redevelop. So that's something that we really enjoy doing, and it really helps us, you know, help others. Cause I think there's, you know, like I said, adding value there, I think is that's where we can add the maximum value.
Sure. So what are you looking in those type of situations to redevelop those type of properties into? Is it kind of a total repurpose of use, or is it, you know, just kind of improving?
Yeah, it can be. That's a great question. You know, it really is kind of on a case by case basis. You know, one example is the project I mentioned. We have a project in Malden, right? So it's just outside of Boston, Massachusetts. And we were looking to purchase hotels and motels to redevelop into multifamily housing, and got a hold of this one property owner, and they were interested in selling the property. And we looked at the numbers, and it didn't make sense from a multifamily situation. We really wanted to reuse the existing bones and such. But we quickly realized that the zoning allowed for the use of industrial as of right for distribution centers. And the numbers, the rents for that type of use are very favorable today, given the strong demand from the likes of Amazon, Walmart, Chewy, et cetera. And so we did our analysis there and figured out kind of what it would cost to build and what type of cash flow we could generate, and quickly realized that was the right play there.
Right.
So that's an example where we're going to completely tear down the existing building, you know, scrape the site, as they say, and then build ground up. Another example would be, you know, looking at maybe there's a shopping mall in the Tampa area, right? And there's some amount of reconfiguration that's possible there. So certain retailers are actually still doing rather well in this, given this climate. And then there's some that have really struggled and are bankrupt and need to be, you know, maybe removed from a site. And so there's been some interesting kind of strategies around how can you take, you know, a big box and redevelop that into some type of drop-off or distribution center. You know, how can you take certain retail experiences and convert those to more e-commerce kind of direct pickup type of experiences? Are there are there ways you can reuse, you know, the spaces, some of the public spaces that maybe no longer have the same demand? So maybe there's some piece of the parking lot, for example. We know that there's, for example, Macy's is doing is looking at all their parking lots, and they're looking at redeveloping their parking lots for some of their either out parcels with things like, fast food restaurants or Starbucks drive-throughs and such, or just multifamily in some cases, you know, just literally just giving away the whole parking lot and turning it into something completely different. So there are a lot of different opportunities out there, and it's an exciting time for people who, you know, who have those assets and are interested in investing in some of these different strategies. So,
yeah, that's great. And you're saying there's potential for these people that, you know, the ones that haven't necessarily gone bankrupt, but have these assets that are underperforming and really hurting them, to not necessarily sell, but perhaps find strategic partners that are willing to, you know, come in and help turn around the situation.
Absolutely. And that's where I think we can really help. You know, we have access to, you know, institutional funding. We have friends and family investors that participate as well. And we can bring some capital to the table and then help, you know, really help the owner figure out, okay, these are the pieces of the puzzle that work today. And then these are the pieces of the puzzle that really aren't working. We need to see how we can, you know, they can better be kind of set up economically. So that really is a spatial problem as well as a financial problem, which is you know, something that there's a lot of moving pieces, and it's not necessarily an easy thing for a property owner to do. And that's where we can come in and help and add value.
So. Gotcha. So that, I mean, I presume your background in design and architecture kind of gives a little, helps with providing some insights into these, you know, different opportunities.
It does. It does. I have to say, I don't do a ton of 3D modeling anymore. I still do some financial modeling from time to time, but there's that's an important piece though, right? You really do have to be able to say, okay, well, this is the footprint. This is, you know, look at the zoning, think through what the implications of the amount of space that you could potentially get on the property. So that's where, you know, I'll do some of the initial conceptual kind of thinking, maybe some sketching and thinking about what the square footages might be. And then once we get kind of further down the road, you know, we will bring in the right architect for the job.
Right. Absolutely. For sure.
That's not me.
All right. Absolutely. Each person has their specialty. That's for sure.
Yeah.
What would you say has been your biggest challenge in the current situation right now? You know, obviously coming after a big hit that everyone's had over the past year or so. And now as we're transitioning into hopefully reopening the economy, but again, like you said, a lot of the trends that were just happening up until 2020 are kind of being compounded in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think one obvious challenge is we had a project that we were about to start about a year ago, and you know, it's now almost March, and we were planning on starting at the end of March, and it was a mixed-use project, fairly large project, and you know, we had to put that on hold because there was some portion of that was retail. It is retail. And so that, you know, all that uncertainty was pretty scary for a lot of people. Right. And then over time, I kind of recognized that there's a lot of opportunity here that we just need to be able to help, because I think that's really where we can, what we're meant to do is to find ways to kind of help others, and started reaching out to people, you know, online, using LinkedIn. I had never really used LinkedIn prior to, you know, a year ago when the pandemic starting, and I've really started to connect with some great people like yourself and like some of the other connections that we have on LinkedIn. And it's, so that's been, you know, kind of a challenge that we've turned into an opportunity to connect with more people and to learn more about what some of the other challenges that other people are facing. So, you know, I've had the same challenges that I think anyone had at some point, where there's some cash flow crunches and there was some, hey, what are we doing here? What's our purpose, but how can we kind of better help others? And so, so with that, every challenge, I think there's an opportunity, right? So there, you know, I've certainly fallen on my face a few times in life, and I feel like you learn so much. You learn so much whenever you do that, right? It's always a learning opportunity, and you kind of pick yourself up and keep plowing forward. And if you can kind of take the right attitude and take the right position in terms of, you know, what's next, I think you can really grow and expand as a professional, right? Sure. Which is great. So, in a person, hopefully.
You know, without digging too deeply here, but can you think of like a project or a deal that you're working on that just, it went south, it went sour, you know, that was a learning learning opportunity more than
that's a good question. Yeah, so I'm trying to think of the best example. Yeah, I've been very lucky to have some great partners to this point, and haven't had, and knock on wood, haven't had any major, you know, disasters or blowups. That's been a blessing. But, you know, I think if nothing else, you know, there's been times where, here's one example. I put in, you know, my partners and I were looking at creating a Airbnb hotel in a very, very expensive area of Boston, actually in Cambridge near Kendall Square, which is a hot area for investment and development. And we put in an offer. We were very aggressive on the offer price. We got into the deal, and it was one of those opportunities where you say to yourself, is that the right thing to do? You know, are we in the right place right now? And we started working on the purchase and sale agreement. There were two owners. It was an extremely small piece of land, and we were trying to basically fit in this, 16 unit Airbnb hotel, and with a partner who was very well known short-term stay management company that was kind of focused on that, you know, a year ago. And we got kind of going, and it was pretty quick. Two things happened. One was that we were already kind of a little bit like, is this the right thing? And we were really trying to kind of figure out whether it was where we should be. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit. Right. And the owners were extremely slow to respond as we were trying to negotiate the purchase and sale agreement. And they were, let's just say they weren't that cooperative, and they really didn't want to give us our money back or deposit back. So you can imagine, you know, you put a $50,000 deposit down and, right. and the owner doesn't want to get back to you, even though it's very much within the conditions of the LOI that we submitted. That was a bit of a scary moment, but we did end up getting our money back and got the back out of the deal and whatever else. But it was one of those times where you're dealing with a group, and you know, everything, so much of real estate just depends on the quality of the people that you're dealing with, right. both on your team and externally. Right. And that's been the biggest kind of learning thing that I've been, fortunate to have learned, is that, you know, you have to be very careful about who you're dealing with.
That's extremely challenging, right? Because you're dealing potentially with a seller you don't know that well necessarily until you kind of get into the nitty gritty.
Totally.
That's difficult. Would you say, was that like this Airbnb kind of hotel thing? You said you were doing it with a partner who had the experience in that space. And was the nervousness because it was something new that you guys hadn't considered that type of investment before, or was it?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was something new, something I had looked at and considered, and the rents,
yeah.
let's call it, on a per square foot basis, were extremely high. I mean, right. you know, hotels are a very risky proposition. I'm glad we don't have a hotel today, because right. For obvious reasons. But that was a real challenge, and I think that you hit the nail on the head. You know, it's just not a product type that we had spent a lot of time dealing with. We had looked at a bunch of hotels, like traditional hotels and mm-hmm. such, but this was new. This was different, and there were some regulatory questions that we had that we hadn't really kind of ironed out just yet. So it was really, you know, like anytime you do something for the first time, we were kind of learning, and sure. It was fortunate that it worked out the way it did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any other type of deals or asset types that are kind of new to you that you would consider moving into?
Yeah, I mean, I think the single family for rent space is really, really interesting. It's a very competitive space, though, so you really have to have the right partner in it. From what I understand, we've looked at some properties in Florida and in North Carolina and in Texas that have, you know, the opportunity to be single family for rent. But when it comes down to it, you have to have the right local partner mm-hmm. that really knows the regulatory situation in the municipality or the jurisdiction. Because if you're even slightly wrong on it, the whole deal goes out the window, right? So
right.
so we're very carefully kind of looking at that. There's a lot of demand for it today. I think there will be continue to be demand for it. It's just a matter of kind of, is it overheated at all as well? Mm-hmm. So I think there's opportunity there. It's just something that we're not diving head first into the pool without looking. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there are, as you said, there are, it is a bit of a competitive market. I've seen many developers take on those type of projects and can be very lucrative, you know, if done right. But like you said, if done right, right? It has to be done and understood the local nuances, which are totally different in every location.
Yeah. And I'm very, you know, just given my experience, I'm very capable of figuring out what the cost will be for a multifamily deal or an industrial deal or even a commercial deal. But single family market is different. It's very, very local. It's hyper competitive. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have the right, you know, group that's going to purchase, you know, either purchase the home sites from you or that's going to partner with you to actually build the home sites, it can be a little challenging.
Absolutely.
So, but anyways, it's a great market and something that's of interest.
That's cool. Yeah. yeah. It's always good to look into, you know, to see what, you know, what trends are happening and, Absolutely. You know, see what opportunities are outside of the box, as we would say.
Yeah. And I really feel, I mean, I feel like industrial and the e-commerce space, it's been talked about, but it's hard to quantify, you know, how much demand is there, because it's just so vast.
And it keeps growing.
Yeah, it just keeps growing. And I really think that, you know, retail, I think retail is interesting. I think retail is a really interesting space, but I can't even begin to quantify what, you know, what the retail market is going to look like 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, my significant other, she's been ordering everything online, right? She's been shopping online like 80% of the time, whereas right. before maybe it was 20%. So I can only imagine that's not similar across households mm-hmm. across our country, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's no question that it's increased by, you know, by a large amount for everyone, obviously yeah. just because of circumstance. The question really will be, you know, will things kind of reverse back to, you know, the way they were or, yeah. you know, or will it continue trending in this direction?
Well, I think the interesting thing on that is I absolutely think there's always going to be room for the retail experience. People want to go out. They want yeah, to have that experience of being together with other people and looking at things in person and touching and feeling them. But there's, you know, we were talking about an Instacart order the other day and my significant other, she paid $7 to have the groceries picked up. Right. And like, okay, like $7, like she didn't have to spend an hour and a half going back and forth to the grocery store. Like in my mind, that sort of experience is only going to continue.
Sure.
But whereas, you know, going to a restaurant or something else will always, so the point of bringing the retail piece up is just that I think, you know, from the, you know, industrial last mile type of distribution in dense urban mm-hmm. industrial sites, you're just going to, that demand is just going to be super, super strong for a long time to come, because you need to have, whether it's drone delivery or whether it's, you know, somebody driving an Amazon van, there's going to be that need for that last mile, that on demand distribution, you know, supply chain.
So, absolutely.
Pretty interesting stuff.
Very much so. John, I want to jump right into the final four over here. And this is the last segment of our show. We ask four questions to our guests. The first question for you is, what is the worst job that you ever had?
Well, I think the worst job that I've ever had was probably, I worked for a large company. It was right after playing professional basketball in Australia, which was a blast after college. And, I was doing data management, and it was managing financial data. I was basically a glorified data entry, and and it was either that or landscaping, and I was required to remove a bunch of poison ivy in somebody's backyard.
Oh boy!
And so I ended up with 2 weeks worth of poison ivy all over my body.
Oh man, that's and to think that the data entry is a tie with that. You just imagine.
It was pretty bad. Just imagine off the movie Office Space.
Oh boy, and I've had poison ivy, so I can imagine. What is a book you've read that's given you a paradigm shift?
You know, I guess I'd have to say, I always like to give two answers. So I'd say Miracle Morning was a really good book that I enjoyed, that I've implemented in my own life. And it's been meaningful for a lot of reasons. And then the other one was Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I think a lot of people have read as well. And nothing else that just kind of reinforced some of the recognition that the entrepreneurial kind of approach to life was for me. And that if you really want to control your own destiny, you have to own assets, right? And so I think that to me was really kind of a game changer in terms of my mindset. You know, the cool thing about it is it's kind of a simple book. You know, it doesn't try to. I've read very complex financial books and textbooks and such, and it's just a straightforward message. I think that's really well delivered. So
I mean, there's no question that the delivery of that message was very well done in that book, you know, absolutely. Great, great answers. What is a skill or talent that you would like to learn?
So I played the trombone as a kid, and I was okay. I'd played for a couple of years. And the one instrument that I always wanted to learn how to play though is the piano. And I love the piano. I love the sound of the piano, but, something I haven't been able to learn, and I was thinking about signing up for lessons the other day, so maybe I'll do that.
There you go. Very good. Well, we'll look out for that. hopefully, by the time this show airs, you'll have some updates for us. Let's jump to the final question that we have. is, what does success mean to you?
That's one of those questions I think everyone kind of, you know, should ponder and should think about, kind of, how do you define that for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And it really comes down to me to a couple of things. One is, you know, freedom, you know, what control of my time and my focus. And then two is you know, it has to be, you know, the you know, kind of coupled with freedom is the ability to spend time with those that I care about, that I value, you know, friends and family. And then three, you know, I think the financial piece, right? You have to have financial stability and, mm. and prosperity to be able to do things, not only for yourself, but for others, and to be able to generate and create opportunity for others. So I think, you know, when you kind of put those three things together, that's what success is for me. And I feel, you know, I really do feel fortunate and blessed to have been put in a position where I'm able to do that. You know, success is not a destination. It's really a journey, I think. You know, how can you live a successful life? It's not just, hey, I'm a success or a failure. It's, how can I live successfully, right, and manage my time and my life in a positive way? And so I've tried to do that every day. And that's, I guess that's the way I look at it.
Love that. Success is a journey. And, you know, make sure you're on the right path. That's a great outlook on that. Thanks so much, John. Where can our listeners find you or reach out to you?
Sure. They can go to pughmgmt.com, pughmgmt.com. Also mentioned that we are doing a webinar, a Tampa Bay value add webinar. I'm going to give exclusive access for your listeners to sign up early. So there's going to be a limited number of seats. We'd love to have you there and speak with you there. And you can also email us if you have a question. You get info@pughmgmt.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, John, for joining us today. I appreciate it, you know, spending the time with us and getting to know a little bit more about, you know, what makes you guys tick and how you guys are moving forward in this incredible current age that we're living in.
Thank you, Yona. Great speaking with you.
Yeah. And to all of our listeners, remember, the best advice comes only when you ask. Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn. Send me a DM, a connection request, Yona Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.